Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
On the podcast this week, I'm chatting to Rosie Bannister, Managing Director of Acticom UK, and Kate Stevens, who's President of Europe at Acticom. We're going to be talking about how to build a remote culture in a PR firm. Before we start, thanks so much as ever to our podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Rosie and Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Call me a cynic, but you know, is there such a thing as a flexible working culture? Is it not just pretty similar to a normal working culture?
I think it depends on where you work, Ben. And I would never call you a cynic. I have worked in lots of places. I wouldn't like to say how many, given the years I've been in PR. I don't think I've ever worked anywhere that has a truly flexible approach to working. And people look at flexible working in a very different way. Actually, a lot of the comments, it's been a big topic of conversation at the moment, a lot of the comments and opinions that we've seen is that flexibility is all about where you work, you know, home or office. But actually, flexible working to us is a lot different. It's about how you work, and it's about using flexible working to your advantage in your life. So I think, yeah, I think there is the opportunity to have it. I just don't think many people benefit from it or use it.
OK, so your basic premise is taking the emphasis away from the where and thinking about the how. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that's essentially it in a nutshell. Now, obviously, we as tech specialists in the agency world, we've been working with clients since time immemorial, talking about this sort of future of work and true flexible working and how tech is there to enable it. But fundamentally, the biggest challenge is habit. And it's our habit to turn up at 9 o'clock. It is our habit to think that the end of the day is at 6 o'clock. And the reality is, in a client service world where we are, it's really difficult because for years we've been told you've got to be available during the day when your clients need you to be available. But the reality is, when your clients need you to be available, it's probably outside of those hours at some sort of event or launch. Some sort of crisis very rarely happens at a convenient hour just before lunch or the weekend or something like that. And, you know, things have always been put in place to allow people to get time back in lieu, but then they still will have had that full day. And actually, the reality is if this past year has taught us anything, is that people can actually be sensible, be grown up and be adult, deliver against their clients' needs. And their clients are really forgiving of the fact that they might not be available during that lunch period, but they're quite happy because their needs are being met and everyone seems happy and working in the same direction. So it's absolutely doable to have a more flexible working day, especially in the service industry like we are.
But that, I mean, that's, I get that, right? And it is a logical proposition you put there. But isn't the, having done this for a year now, isn't the reality that is what has tended to happen, not in all cases, but what has tended to happen is that employees have actually ended up working longer hours through lockdown because they're at home, because it's more flexible. And it may be that the employer hasn't intended that to happen, but that is it, very often what has actually been the reality of that changing to working from home and flexible working practices. And that's that longer term, medium term, that's an issue, isn't it? Because we're going to get burnout.
Yeah, I don't think we can look at the last year as the ultimate test of flexible working. I think if anything, the last year has given people the opportunity to work from home, but has it provided flexible working? Well, probably not, because their laptop is generally not far from them, particularly, you know, if they live, you know, if they're not lucky enough to live in a large property, they're probably working from their sofa, perhaps from their bedroom. So I think, you know, if you look at the last year, absolutely there have been challenges with how people work. If you look to how flexible working should work all the time, it should be about making sure that you use your work time and your home time to benefit you. It could be that, you know, it's about encouraging and showing our staff that there is a different way to working and they don't have to sit at their computer and be visible all days and all hours of the week. And it's about actually going, you know, it is okay if you want to go out for a run or if you need to go to the shops. We're not going to be asking you where you are. Interestingly, I actually just started following one of my staff on Strava. And I know that I know now when they go for a run. And unfortunately, they know now when I go out on my bike. But the point is, with actual true flexible working, it doesn't actually matter. As long as I haven't actually impacted, you know, negatively on any of my client or my team by going out for a cycle in the middle of the day. The point is, it's about making it work for you.
So it's about culture, is it? Because you can't sort of organise this stuff, can you? You've got to set a culture where people understand that this is okay.
Completely, absolutely. It's completely down to culture. And a few years ago, a wise HR soul said to me, you will never get people to change the way they work unless you do it yourself. And there's such a habit of presenteeism, and there's such a habit about leaders in particular always having to seem busy. God forbid for one day we actually take a chance to just chill out and think about things. And it sort of becomes a bit of one-upmanship. Oh, I'm very busy. But also, surely the business can only be healthy if the leader is very busy doing busy things all the time. But actually, a business is only going to be healthy if the leader's got the headspace to lead it in the right direction. So actually, if more of my peers and Rosie's peers were more vocal about when they take a step back to either muse on something or just to have a bit of balance, you've got to lead by example. It's kind of like in anything. You lead by example and people will follow. You are the reason that the permission exists to log off early, to say, actually, do you know what? I'm going to be online late. No one needs me. But if you do, I am on WhatsApp and it's fine, but I've just got to go and do this thing over here. And that should be absolutely fine. I think one of the frustrations that I have is people keep focusing when they talk about flexible working around things like parents. It's not just parents that benefit. Of course they do. Absolutely they do. But it's absolutely everyone that can benefit. And I think, you know, you're right to talk about the challenges the past year gave us, but the challenges the past year gave us were entirely unique. People couldn't plan other activities. You know, they were essentially housebound. So they wanted to fill their time. And yes, they ended up overworking to do that. That's not good. It's not healthy. It's not actually productive. It's quite dangerous because actually their output probably wasn't very good either. But actually, if people are doing stuff, encouraged to go out and do other things, whether it is exercise, whether it's carers' needs, whether it's just getting some fresh air and enjoying the day because they happen to be the type of person that works better late at night, but they can have some free time, binge their box sets in the afternoon because nobody happens to need them, but they want to focus on an article at 10 o'clock at night because that's when they're on point. Crack on, do it. As long as your deadlines are met and your work colleagues' time is respected, that's all we ask. Is it actually a big part of this is trust. Trust is huge.
So just on, we'll come on to trust in a minute because I think that is really interesting, isn't it? In essence, it's pretty simple. You just it's about the leadership setting an example, and that then become, and then that flowing down through the organisation is in essence how you're setting this culture.
Yes, that absolutely. But also, we're conscious that we need to change habits of a lifetime. Kate mentioned earlier about habit, and we're having to change the way people think. I mean, interestingly, when we announced that we were removing core hours from our contract entirely and reducing the working week by 2.5 hours, one of our team went to their manager and said, does that mean I can stop at 5:30 now instead of 6? And that misses the point entirely. It's lovely and it's absolutely right, but it misses the point because actually they can finish whenever it works for them, as long as they are getting their job done and working well and not impacting anybody negatively. So it's leading by example. It's about changing habits. It's about, and on our part, we have to help people with that. We have to provide training. We have to look at coaching. So we're looking at external consultants who can come in and unlock those blind spots that people have. But also we have monthly mindfulness sessions, which actually really help you to think about how you can cope with your work-life balance better. And we're looking at also creating a manager's toolkit because we need to lead by example, but all of our team leads also need to do that. And so we need to help them do that and help them to trust better as well.
And you talked about the contracts there. Just give us a little more detail on what you did there. And has that had a transformative effect, or is it just another step?
So, I mean, I guess we should probably say what intelligent working is, right? Because, we introduced intelligent working, which was all about actually using your intelligence, which is core value of Axicom, to look at how you work and to use your intelligence to make sure that you had a better work-life balance. But we found when we introduced this over a year ago, and Kate can probably give you more details of that because I wasn't there at the time, but we found that actually one of the things that was our team struggled with over the past year the most was having the confidence to be able to put this into practice. So we realized we had to help them with that. So when we launched Intelligent Working 2.0 a month ago, we put in place specific things to show them how we think they can make it work for them. So we, and like I said, we removed the term core hours from our contract. So no longer did it say you had to be at your desk from 9 till 6. We reduced the working week to 37 and a half hours from 40 hours because we wanted to make it even easier to be flexible throughout your week. We also we introduced these training sessions and we just needed to make sure that, you know, we could show people exactly how they could do it. One other thing we did as well, we have a weekly Friday meeting, which is at 4:30 every Friday afternoon. We moved that to 2:30 on Friday afternoon because we recognise that actually some people might want to make the most of it and leave early on a Friday afternoon. And we didn't want to say you can have early Friday afternoons because we wanted people to be aware that they could do that if they made the right decisions.
I'm all done by 4:30 on a Friday afternoon.
To be honest, I'm done by 2:30 on a Tuesday, but you know, not really allowed to admit that. I think, you know, the other point that Rosie was talking about there was also making sure that the managers can help their teams sort it out. You know, I mentioned before that people can really easily understand how this might benefit parents and they struggle to see how it might benefit themselves. So bringing things together to life with examples of how you might be able to use this is key. And, you know, when we did survey our folks to find out actually how are they using it, what do they think, a big piece of feedback that came back from line managers was we're not really sure how to help and encourage the team to use it properly. And that was another learning for us, is making sure that they have the right training in place to support a workforce that isn't necessarily always going to be available during a certain set of time. And to also help bring to life the different scenarios, how you might be able to use this that doesn't impact negatively on either your clients or your own team members. Because that has always been a big bugbear of mine when people just don't respect your time to meet deadlines. It drives me nuts. And, you know, you can see how that could get unruly in a situation like this, right? So it's really important to layer in all of that training, but also that trust piece, that trust and empowerment for people.
It's so go on. You talked about some research there. Should we just talk about that for a little while? Because you presumably did some research up front to work out what, to give you a line in the sand, and then you've done a bit more since, I imagine. Just talk me through some of that employee data and the most useful elements for that.
So I think the starting point is really interesting, isn't it? And really what drove us was the demand from new talent coming into a business, expecting and wanting more flexible, which is really interesting because the new talent coming in were not parents. You know, the parents were sort of a bit older and felt that they had to more formally ask for different flexible arrangements. But it was just sort of a given that people were expecting the ability to be able to work from home a couple of times or work from a cafe or, you know, do their gym session in a less busy time because perhaps they find it quite overwhelming when it's very busy there and they just, you know, needed a bit more headspace. All sorts of reasons why people wanted that. And actually, it suddenly occurred to me that the way we were operating was quite dark ages in many ways. And for, as I think I mentioned earlier, for so many years, we've been championing this sort of flexible working environment that tech can enable for our clients. And yet we still had quite a rigid structure ourselves. And I thought, well, crikey, if half of our clients live like this anyway and do this, then why are we not walking the walk as well as talking the talk? And just to segue off slightly, many of our clients already have remote working cultures, not necessarily flexible working cultures. And there is a big difference, you know, as Rosie said, flexible working it's much more than that. And, you know, those remote working cultures, the interesting bit of feedback that our clients who already had those said is they obviously very used to online meetings, but they never used to put their cameras on for those online meetings. And then all of a sudden this pandemic struck and they all started putting their cameras on. So even they changed the way in which they worked, even though they always worked like that. Anyway, I completely digress. So that was the initial thinking behind it was, you know, we want to be a progressive employer. So we've really got to get with the program and understanding what people wanted. And at the time, again, you do that staff survey and people don't necessarily know what it is they're looking for just beyond more flexibility. And you as an employer, you sort of find yourself thinking, OK, more flexibility, how exactly? And nobody's necessarily being clear with that. It was the second survey that was a lot more interesting, where people had something available to them, but didn't necessarily feel they could do it with confidence was the key thing.
When you said the first survey, that was done before you started. Is that?
Yeah.
And then the second survey was done after the rollout had begun. How?
Yes.
A year.
Roughly. Okay. About a year. Okay.
About a year in. And I think it's that confidence piece. And do you know what? I couldn't honestly tell you if we'd have got different results had it not been for the pandemic. It's hard to know how much that skews things because, of course, if everybody suddenly is remote all the time, I think there is a fear factor that people have that if they're not seen to be working, they might not therefore be working. So they do tend to overwork. And it is about making sure that people feel completely trusted to down tools and also use the tech that's available to them to change their status so that people can see when they're on and offline.
But what sort of stuff came through in that second survey data then? What was the insight on that? Just from you said there were some people weren't necessarily sure how to use the freedom that they've been given, is that?
Yeah. Well, I think what came through the most was firstly what we really tried to do with intelligent working is not put rules in place, because by putting rules in place it completely takes away from what we're trying to say, which is why we're not saying have an early Friday, we're not saying finish earlier, we're not saying move your hours, we're saying use your noggin to make it work in the right way. So what came through in the survey was actually people not necessarily, I think people need rules rules and guidance. And I think the biggest thing that came through was actually saying, you know, I'm not sure I need more guidance to be able to tell me what I can do. And this is why we kind of provided these other sort of ideas in terms of the core hours and the change in the meeting time. We also found, you know, in terms of where people are working, you know, actually after the last year that the survey, you know, our survey found, bing bong, we found that actually, you know, only 12% actually want to work from the office. And I think that's, you can see that shift that people, you know, about where they want to work, you know, is changing. And I think that's quite useful. But also, we also found that, I'm just flipping to my results. We also found that it was about having the confidence and empowering them. So how can we empower them better to be able to make sure they can make the decisions that are going to help them in what they're doing? So they're the key things that really came out, was about people were happy to work from home and more. They still wanted to collaborate. We had 62% of people saying they still wanted to be able to collaborate with people and see them in their teams. But mostly it was about needing us to empower them and give them the confidence to make the right decisions to take advantage of this in the best way. And that goes back to breaking people's habits again.
And you know what's interesting with that is I suspect had we not been all locked down and working remotely, people may have felt more empowered had they visibly seen leadership behaving in a different way.
Yeah.
So, you know, to that point of you've got to lead by example. But of course, in this world, not everybody's going to speak to me every day. I haven't got the time to go around 50 odd employees and have a quick chat to them every day and let them know what I'm up to. But when they see you in the office, they might see you appearing late and cheerio off early or whatever it might be. That's a very different vibe from just assuming, you know, it's like the way people talk about social media. You look through a window and you think you know what's going on. And that's what this world has been like with everybody completely remote. So I don't necessarily think that we would have had the same sort of results had we not been in a lockdown world.
So what you're saying is that actually we need to make the whole team follow each other on Strava, right?
Like creepy running stalkers. Yeah, absolutely. Down for that culture.
Just coming back on a couple of, I mean, the office has become a bit of an emotive thing, hasn't it? So where are you guys? So presumably people, your 50 odd staff can go to the office when they want for however long they want. Is that in essence what you're saying? There's no rules on that front, or are you putting some guidance in?
So there's no rules as such, but we want them to be able to work with their teams to understand what's the best way they can work with their teams. And we are in a service. What's the best way they can work with their clients? So they need to find what works for them. But also, we all know that we need to find a way that works for us as a bigger company. So, you know, there are going to be times when we say, we're going to be in the office, we're going for drinks afterwards. Anybody who's around, be great to see you. There's also going to be times when, you know, you work better when you are together. It might be when you're brainstorming or planning, or it might be, you know, building those relationships as your team. But we want them to work that out, and we can give them guidance and tips and tricks and training, but they will work out, and it'll be different for everybody, and it'll be different for each team. But we're gonna do another survey in 3 months because we think it's really important to keep track of it. We're not, you know, we left it a year because obviously the pandemic, and it was the first iteration of it, but we will be surveying both our teams and our clients because we want to make sure that A, it's not impacting negatively on anybody, and actually it's only going to start impacting positively on everybody.
Well, that's good. Have you done client surveys on it? Have they noticed any difference? I guess because of the pandemic, kind of everyone's been, it's kind of been, everyone's been working remotely, so it hasn't really impacted that at all, I guess, so far.
I think that was... Sorry, Rosie. Too many voices.
I was just going to chuck in our NPS score, because actually we do a client survey on a yearly basis, actually just a standard client survey, and our NPS score has risen over the past year. So it certainly hasn't impacted us negatively so far.
And I think I was just going to say that from the stuff that we share about our flexible approach, et cetera, we're getting really good feedback from clients on that. And actually, they do all of this stuff themselves anyway, right? Larger organisations, more corporate, they have this kind of stuff in place all the time. So yesterday we had a no meeting day at AXACON, and this was tough, you know. Clients want meetings. We're all remote, so we all want to have meetings. Everyone wants a blinking meeting. God forbid a day goes by without a meeting. Are you really working if you're not in a meeting? I don't even know anymore. So we had this no meetings day. Popped it up onto LinkedIn yesterday. The amount of really positive responses and, do you know, we have a no meeting every Wednesday. And I'm like, blimey, every Wednesday you can fit
that
in.
Lucky things.
Wow. But the real positivity around it. And, you know, this is such a great thing. This is such a great move. We love this. Feel inspired by this, et cetera, and so forth. And I think for them, if their teams are happy, and if their teams therefore stay longer and stay engaged for longer, key thing, stay engaged for longer, then they're really happy. They're happy with the outcome.
In terms of, I don't know, some sort of more hard-nosed agency KPIs, like, I mean, do you guys use timesheets? Is that how you,
Yes, yeah. And HQ requires it.
Well, it's interesting.
That's a pretty hard KPI, isn't it? Has the number of hours spent on client work, has that gone up, down, or remained broadly the same since you started doing this stuff?
I mean, I think it's remained broadly the same. It's interesting because, you know, I've come from in-house, right? I was the client looking at the timesheets, and now I'm the person filling in the timesheets. And actually, to what we were talking about earlier, I think timesheets are possibly the biggest challenge to a flexible working policy for an agency, because people, certainly junior staff, think the timesheets are there to check that they're doing their hours a day. And actually, they're not at all. And we're trying to educate that that's not the case. It's just trying to make sure that, A, they're not being overworked, and B, we're able to, you know, bill our clients successfully for those who we bill on time for. Others we bill in different ways. So I think timesheets have a lot to answer for in that respect in this industry.
The other interesting thing from going back to the survey is we discovered that there was a bit of a myth around timesheets within the agency that we didn't realise. Everyone assumed you couldn't hit submit on your timesheet until you'd recorded exactly 8 hours every day or more. We don't know where that came from. But it's just what people suddenly thought, oh, well, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. So then they start making stuff up and putting in like random 3 hours of back office time because they're like, I'm like, guys. But then also this is really interesting when sometimes, you know, you deal with client service reports. And it's really important to have the commentary in there alongside just recording the hours. So you understand what's driving over, what's driving under, and you can have really candid conversations with clients. And there's a tiny part of me that does always wonder sometimes if people just panic, like Rosie said, you know, you're a bit more junior, you worry if somebody's checking up on you. Should you just whack in an extra couple of hours on XYZ client because you don't want to seem like you're not working? So my hope is that we can actually have significantly more accurate timesheeting. Because people will feel a lot more confident to record the reality of what they're doing instead of feel they're being checked up on.
Okay. So just as a sort of final thing to wrap this up. So culture, when we're talking about flexible working, culture is the most important thing, is it? Is that in essence? And how do you, and to drive that change, leadership is the most important bit, is that, and so the leadership showing that they're embracing that change to working practices is kind of where you've had the most significant success.
Yes, but also showing that they're embracing it in a number of ways. You know, that the simple reality is most of the leadership of XCOM are also the people who happen to have children. And what the last thing I want to happen is that people therefore assume flexible working can only really be of benefit with people of children. So making sure you highlight the other reasons why you might be using it, and it's not always just for blinking school pickup or whatever it might be, so that people can really see actually how it's entirely acceptable to use something, and being quite vocal about it too, and the benefit that you had around it. So it's very much about helping people see new ways of working and new ways of approaching things. And going back to the discussion about being in the office, when we go in the office, it's really important that people understand the benefit we felt from being in the office and what actually happened. And again, going back to that sort of survey, this bit wasn't technically surveyed, but we did ask teams who started to go back into the office last year as lockdowns were easing, and the positivity about how much they got done together as a group, the little incidental things that you don't want to have to arrange a meeting for, so you just leave it and then it becomes a bigger thing. They just felt very different about their working day. So to help people understand how you could use the office differently from how you used to use it, you know, just in everything that you do, I think there's been a lot of pressure on leadership during this remote world to make sure we're leading by example, and to make sure that culture doesn't fail. And actually what it's done is a really nice leveling out. There's a lot more responsibility on more people's shoulders to show people how to get through different hurdles. And, you know, changing a culture to a flexible working one is just a different kind of hurdle, right?
I think it's important to say, you know, we are doing the best we can, and we think this is a great opportunity for anybody that works at XCOM. We don't have all the answers, and I don't think anybody has all the answers for this at this point. We can just do what we think is the right thing for XCOM. And right now we think the right thing is to give people choice, give people flexibility, put the decision in their hands, and treat them like adults. If you're treated like an adult, you'll generally tend to work like an adult. And we can only do that by example, by training, and by learning, and we'll continue to learn and adapt as we go.
Do you know what?
Final thought on the one thing that sort of is a barrier, if you like, to getting to the office or not going to the office is the commute, isn't it? So I just wonder, do you worry that for people who work quite a long way from the office, they are probably going to choose to not go to the office as much as people who live nearer the office, and that will therefore impact friendships and cultures and groups within the business? Is that not just for XCOM? I think that's for all businesses in many ways who take this sort of approach. Is that something that you can see being a longer term issue?
I think it's a consideration, but I think again, for the last year, nobody's seen anybody, and we found ways of adapting and keeping those relationships going. I started at XCOM completely virtually, and haven't even met everybody in the team. But I think that I still have managed to build great relationships. Well, I say I had. I'm not sure everybody else would agree with me. They tell me, but that's probably because they don't want to get into trouble. But, you know, I think it's been a positive experience. But to that point, I mean, I have a long commute. I have an hour and a half, 2 hour travel into London, there and back. Will it impact it? I don't know. But what it does do is it opens up opportunity. We've talked about flexible working and lots of other things, but actually it allows us to recruit people who don't live in London. So that opens that up for us. We've just hired a creative director who lives in Manchester, for example. So it opens up, opportunity to recruit a wider group of people. And flexible working also opens up the opportunity to create a more diverse culture, because it allows us to recruit women or mums who are coming back to work, or dads who are coming back to work, carers. It's more than a better work-life balance. It also helps grow Axicom as well, and I think that's really interesting too.
I think that diversity piece is really, really important, because it was quite a few years ago now, I remember reading an article, the company shall remain nameless, massive tech brand, had said to all of its agencies in an open letter that it expected them to have more women working on its account because it felt that they didn't have enough diversity in their teams. And I felt myself slightly boiling with a little bit of rage that actually probably the reason why there were fewer women working on that account was I suspected that account was probably a hugely demanding account that was not accepting that people might have a life outside of working on that account. And I thought, I suspect those women are probably also trying to raise young families and are not prepared to compromise for your lovely account. And that's one of the things that I talk about when I say that service industry, there used to be such an expectation of people being ready. And the wonderful thing, if there can be a wonderful thing from the pandemic, is I think it's taught clients that actually it still can work. You can give people flexibility and they can still really deliver. They've done calls with people with kids on their knee. They've had people say, I'm really sorry, I've got to feed the kids at this time. I can't do that at that time. And it's just been much more acceptable. And I think that change in attitude, it's got to stay. And we've got to change our cultures to make sure that it stays, because we can't lose it. We can't go back there. Otherwise, we will never really drive true diversity back into that agency world.
Rosie Bannister and Kate Stevens, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's been fabulous.
It's been amazing. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.